Bitcoin to have, you know, some hyper Bitcoinization, we've got to be able to use it, not just as a store of value, but a way that we can actually go and buy goods and services. Government controls everything we do. I mean, holy crap, we're seeing it in the UK now. You can't even put up something on social media without being worried about the police showing up at your door the next day. The four largest insurance companies have more revenue than the Department of Defense budget.
How bullish are you going forward with just the Bitcoin space in general, seeing things take off to where it's been?
Bitcoin is unstoppable. All these others are going to go to zero. I have zero doubt in that. What we would like to do with Crowd Health, and I know we'll get into it soon, but is allow people to fund each other's healthcare expenses over the lightning rails.
If Bitcoin just is the store of value, it has failed. It would not be the peer-to-peer cash that Satoshi wrote in the white paper.
The similar way that Bitcoin is pissing off all these people in the fiat banking system, all the rent seekers who've been able to profit from all the transactional costs back and forth, what we're trying to do with healthcare is take out the rent seekers of healthcare.
Bing bong. I am back with another edition of the State of Bitcoin podcast, where I've got the man, the myth, the legend, Andy, the CEO of Crowd Health here. But Andy, you've been in the game for quite some time, and now we're seeing things drastically change. We're seeing a new administration come in and talk about a Bitcoin strategic reserve. We even had a central bank talking about putting in a Bitcoin strategic reserve today, where they're voting on it here tomorrow. We're recording this on the 29th here of January. So Andy, with all these things changing, how bullish are you going forward with just the Bitcoin space in general, seeing things take off to where it's been?
Man, I'm a hodler, man. I have not sold my Bitcoin yet. Don't expect to. You know, I think I'm maybe like you, one of the few that was like, hey, if it drops to 50, I'm actually happy. So, you know, it's one of those good spots to be in, right? Like you want the price to go up. If it does, that's great. If it goes down, that's great too. So I'm in a pretty good spot. You know, we started also kind of before we started recording here, talking about just the movement in healthcare and some of the things going on with RFK Jr. And man, I'm seeing a pretty revolutionary change on people focusing on their health. I mean, it's a pretty cool thing to see. I can't tell you exactly what's inspiring that other than just a lot more people talking about it. But I have talked to so many friends over the last couple of weeks who have been leading unhealthy lifestyles in the past and are ready to make a change. And so I'm bullish on Bitcoin. I'm bullish on healthcare. So fired up about 2025.
Yeah, I mean, I think 2025 is going to be an absolute firecracker of a year, to say the very least, because I think there's been a huge shift, right? So, I mean, you know, four or five years ago, we all know what happened. Everything, the world got shut down. And I think a lot of people have started to question things since then. Now, you know, with that, I think we've seen the rise of the carnivore diet. I know I've seen it with friends outside of the Bitcoin space. And, you know, just more health conscious people. Maybe it's just in the areas that I'm living in. You know, you got to be in bikini shape all year round in sunny Tampa, Florida. But why do you think that there's been that shift that you're noticing, Andy? Do you think it's, you know, maybe the inflationary things we're seeing? Maybe it's something that sparked it. What do you think is that big, like, mental shift that we're starting to see happen here? Because I'm noticing it as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think it actually started with COVID stuff. I think people are starting to see, like, a lot of the things that doctors are telling us are old, outdated, and influenced by larger interests than the interest of the patient. I mean, I think we saw it in COVID. Clear the pharmaceutical company's interest came above the interest of the population. We're starting to question things now. We're starting to question whether or not, you know, high cholesterol actually does have a significant impact on our cardiovascular health. We're starting to question a lot of the things that the ADA has given us in terms of diets. We're starting to question a lot of this money printing, and the money printing we promise won't have an impact on inflation. And so a lot of things that I feel like we've been conditioned over the last 20, 30, 40 years have started to break. I think a lot of people are starting to think for themselves. they're starting to see that some of these, again, special interests have a lot more money than we do as individuals, and therefore can have a pretty phenomenal detriment to us as a population and as individuals. So I think it's just a lot of questioning of what we've heard for a long, long time, and being like, hey, hold on a second, this stuff doesn't make any sense anymore. You know, why the hell is my, you know, am I paying $10 for a carton of eggs? You know, it wasn't like that before COVID. It wasn't like that before we printed trillions and trillions of dollars for this, you know, disease that we all were so scared of. And so, you know, I'm a bull right now. I think the questioning is good. And I'm, like I said, I'm excited for the next couple of years, because look, I'm in healthcare and I'm really focused on getting these healthcare prices down. But I think if we can all get healthier, that almost solves, you know, our issue in itself. You know, one quick stat here is 25 cents on every dollar that we spend on healthcare is going to diabetes. And the vast majority of that is type 2 diabetes. People are starting to finally realize that type 2 diabetes is a lifestyle issue and one that we can get changed. So imagine, you know, if all these people with diabetes would actually start changing their lifestyle as opposed to, you know, focusing on drugs, what it could do to our healthcare system. And then ultimately how that, you know, equates to what it does to the money printing in this country. If we have $1 trillion less of expenses on healthcare, I think that could be a pretty phenomenal outcome.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's always where the incentives lie. Now, there's been
incentives are everything. We're Bitcoiners, right? Incentives are everything.
Yeah, they say follow the money, right? And you can usually figure out why something is being done. Now, RFK, we mentioned him a little bit at the beginning pre-show, and we were talking about him. There's been a lot of things that he's been doing today, even. And it seems like he's going to be a pivotal part on everything going forward, where he was, you know, one of the first to speak at the Bitcoin conference a couple years ago, and then now he's a part of Trump's team. How important do you think RFK is going to play, like the role he's going to play here, whether it's, you know, the MAHA, the Make America Healthy Again, the decentralizing of potentially of healthcare and all of these other aspects? How big of a role do you think he's going to be playing in these next 4 years?
Well, look, I think there's two components here. One is as you said, Bitcoin. He's clearly a fan of Bitcoin. A couple of years ago when he did his Bitcoin speech, I mean, it was the speech at the conference. There's no doubt about it. I mean, he understood more than even, you know, diehard Bitcoiners what Bitcoin is about, the benefits of Bitcoin, the decentralization, the kind of disruptive nature to the dollar. So I was a huge fan of that. And I know he's in HHS, which doesn't have any direct correlation to Bitcoin. I think having somebody in the administration who is pro Bitcoin, anti shitcoin, I think is a huge benefit to us as Bitcoiners. You know, in terms of healthcare, I mean, I think his biggest benefit is you have a very well-known name, whether you like the Kennedy name or not. I think he has shown that he is an independent of many kinds, an independent mind of many kinds. And I think he's just going to allow us to start questioning some of these things, you know. And before, if you questioned, you are, you know, an anathema to, you know, the ways of the healthcare world. And so now I think that if you're questioning, that's becoming much, much more accepted within the community. I'm loving that RFK is actually bringing this to the forefront as something we need to take a really hard look at. The fact that we're all being injected with stuff when we are born, just oftentimes minutes after we're born, and the spike of some of these conditions over the last, you know, decade, at least somebody is starting to question it now. Like, it's got to, we got to question the science. You know, and we were told during COVID, don't question the science. I mean, that is science. You got to question it. You know, we have to question it. We have to run experiments on it. And none of that was done over the last couple of decades in many, many cases. And so I just love the fact that we can start having some of these questions discussed in the public forum without people thinking that you're a conspiracy theorist or one of these things. It absolutely has to happen. And I think that's going to be RFK's biggest contribution.
Yeah, and I think it's really interesting here too, when, you know, we are seeing things like I mean, I had friends during the past 4 or 5 years period that, you know, I got majors in history and everything else. And I did human research in college, so not to pump my own bags, but they were essentially saying like, what do you know about this stuff? You don't trust the science. And I'm like, well, part of the scientific method is, you know, questioning everything and keeping going down this. But apparently I was the crazy person. But it seems like, you know, just in, I guess, the overall vibe shift of the entire country, it seems like it's been a gigantic shift. Now, I'm going to ask you, do you think that, you know, Donald Trump here is going to play potentially a bigger role in, than anybody in Bitcoin's history, whether it's Michael Saylor or maybe not quite Satoshi for actually creating the thing, but, you know, with everything going forward, whether it's decentralizing the money and then decentralizing potentially the healthcare and just kind of pushing everything back to maybe the roaring 20s or, you know, America's golden age?
Look, I don't know if Trump is going to be the biggest. And in fact, I mean, if he wants to be the biggest, the thing he should do is deregulate some of these, you know, fiat monetary systems, which are, you know, and I run a healthcare company, but it's also a fintech company. The amount of incredible regulatory interference that happens on the fiat rails is incredible to me. And it is adding, you know, significant percentage points, you know, probably 10% of all of our transactions. And people are like, oh, wait, hold on a second. Like, you know, my credit card fee is only 2 or 3%. Well, if you think about the amount of time that it takes to all that to process, you know, all these interference rent seekers, if you will in between, you know, in our money processes. I mean, I think there's a significant upside to deregulation of some of these, you know, fiat monetary systems. And then let's deregulate some of the things that are going on with Bitcoin. I mean, right now, I'll tell you one of my biggest pains is that what we would like to do with CrowdHealth, and I know we'll get into it soon, but is allow people to fund each other's healthcare expenses over the Lightning rails. And the challenge that we have, and I'm only saying this because of the regulatory stuff that's going on, is if I give Brandon $10,000, let's say, but my cost basis is $1,000 of that 10, and I'm giving it to you, guess what? You're responsible for the $9,000 of capital gains just because I gave you Bitcoin. I mean, that sounds absolutely ridiculous to me, right? If I gave Brandon $10,000 of cash, you wouldn't be responsible for any kind of capital gains on that because it's a gift. And so there's just all these archaic rules that go on with Bitcoin that we just need to get rid of. And I know that Senator Lummis is working on that and others are too. So I'm just optimistic because we've got a lot of people in the administration on the executive side, on the legislative side that are pro Bitcoin. And I'm hoping that they get rid of some of these stupid regulations so that we can use Bitcoin more frequently, make it a little bit more, you know, liquid, if you will, so that we can start using Bitcoin. People always kind of like shrug when I say that, but I think that for Bitcoin to have, you know, hyper Bitcoinization, we've got to be able to use it, not just as a store of value, but a way that we can actually go and buy goods and services. From my perspective, the more line items on my personal, you know, financial statement that I can convert from fiat to Bitcoin, use Bitcoin instead of fiat, the more use cases that we have for Bitcoin, the higher Bitcoin is going to go. So I'm not saying don't stack. I'm saying I would like to use all my fiat that I'm currently using, transition it to Bitcoin. I mean, it's just a way better way of using money. The fact that I could go right now on Lightning and transfer you $100 and you get it immediately without you having to wait 3, 4, 5 days for it is a perfect example of why we should be on a Bitcoin standard.
Yeah, and I mean, $100 is just a minuscule amount too. You could do like massive amounts of money, you know, millions 100%. Of dollars potentially, and you don't have to wait the 7 to 10 to 14 business days or whatever it takes for your bank to confirm that they've actually got the money to really just move a couple commas over and send it to your to whoever you're transferring that to, maybe another bank or whatever. But I mean, I agree with you 100%. I actually heard an interview from Jack Dorsey the other day where he said that if Bitcoin just is the store of value, it has failed. It would not be the peer-to-peer cash that Satoshi wrote in the white paper, and it just wouldn't necessarily reach the pinnacle of, you know, what it could potentially be. Now, you know, with everything that you're seeing going on, a big thing that you brought on was regulation. Now, it seems like Trump is going in the positive direction with regulations, moving away potentially, you know, some of the difficulties in accounting if you're holding Bitcoin on the balance sheet, and, you know, kind of moving in that way. Mm-hmm. And some crazy things like potentially abolishing income tax. Now, how much do you see these things actually, I guess, coming to fruition here? And do you think that, you know, if this were to be the case, more companies would start to, you know, put Bitcoin on the balance sheet, similar to what MicroStrategy is doing, just using the old system to potentially, you know, buy into that new system? Quick break from this podcast episode to bring you the safest way to buy Bitcoin on the planet. You got to go to the well, folks. That's right, the Bitcoin well. They will help you buy Bitcoin and send it directly to your personal wallet. You can sell Bitcoin directly from your personal Bitcoin wallet. And on top of that, if you want to buy large amounts of Bitcoin, they've got some of the most competitive rates in the space where they've got great white glove service. I'll even help introduce you to my friends over at the Bitcoin Well to make sure that they're taking care of you when you want to go through the over-the-counter service. And on top of that, they help support you and the freedom technology that Bitcoin offers. So I wouldn't partner with a company that I don't use myself. So I use Bitcoin Well to make all of my Bitcoin purchases. So I highly recommend them. So why don't you go to thebitcoinwell.com/greencandle and you can sign up today and join the party at the well. Maybe even get some tokens where you could throw into the wishing well and potentially win some free sats as well. Enough from me. Let's get back to the show.
Yeah, I mean, again, I'm cautiously optimistic. I don't think we're getting rid of the income tax anytime soon. I wish we would. Let's get rid of the capital gains tax first. I think that's a great first step, because I think that will actually promote growth within our economy. We've seen it over and over and over again. When you reduce the capital gains tax, people are willing to put more money into the economy. When you raise the income tax, the capital gains tax, people are putting less money into the economy. Investment in the economy, investment in startups, investment in innovation is what drives our economic growth. And I think the current administration, at least from what they've said, acknowledges that. I think the previous administration was anti-growth, human flourishing in many, many ways due to some of their policies. And so I'm cautiously optimistic. I think with Trump, anything he says, you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt a little bit. I think the thing that he's put together, in return to the team that he has put together, is a really good one. I think the question mark is his ego going to outsize the egos of, you know, Elon Musk and some of these guys that he's got alongside him? We'll see. You know, is his management capability good enough to be able to let these people go and do what they want to do? You know, I run a company. You know, I think we are successful because we've got a lot of good people. I tell them the vision, they go after it. I don't micromanage. Really, really good people, your eagles, your stars, your home run hitters are the ones that don't want to be micromanaged. They want to be left to go and do what they need to do. I'm hoping Trump can do that with some of his, you know, superstars that he's got, you know, aligned with him. I've seen some interviews from some of those people, and I know that we're only, what, a week or so, two into it, but so far, so good. You know, we'll see how we do in the next year. You know, I think the next year is going to say a lot. Is he going to be able to keep some of these superstars on board with him, or is he going to drive them out by, you know, some of his egotistical plays? I'm hoping it's the former and not the latter, because I think, you know, America looks pretty darn bright if you let some of these people run with some of these things, and we'll see how it goes. I am cautiously optimistic about what we're looking for in 2025 here. I think some of the things in terms of the executive orders, I think I don't know if it's what he called it, his cryptocurrency stockpile or something. I wish it would have been called the Bitcoin Strategic Reserve. But it looks like, you know, some of the people that he has on that panel, I think David Sacks is leading that. I know that David's got some shitcoinery in his past, but I think some of the other people that he's got on there are really interesting Bitcoiners, Bitcoin only people who hopefully will, you know, push the narrative and be successful in pushing the narrative of a Bitcoin only strategic reserve. I think that's the only way of doing it. Unfortunately, I think we still have some FTXs and those types of things, you know, in store for us over the next couple of years. I think as Ripple and all these other, you know, goofball, you know, coins that we have out there are gonna fail, and people are gonna, you know, have a wet blanket on cryptocurrency, you know, generally. But I think we need to get some of that rubbish out of here before people finally realize that Bitcoin is the only way. Anything other than Bitcoin is just another centralized money-making scheme. Bitcoin is the only one that is fully decentralized. And that's absolutely what we need to make this thing a success. So if you can't tell, I'm a Bitcoin only. I'm class of, you know, maybe 2021-ish. Unfortunately saw a little bit of that downturn in 21, 22, but got in, you know, pretty well in the teens when it went down there. So I'm all in and really excited about not only, you know, Bitcoin, but healthcare for 2025.
Yeah. And you mentioned something that I want to dive into, because I have a big worry here. And one of those worries is having Brian Armstrong really close to the mix of everything. Even though Coinbase has been a trusted quote unquote custodian for a few years, if you look around, 8 out of the 11 ETFs in the United States use Coinbase as a custodian. And Brian Armstrong is seemingly trying to maybe weasel his way into, you know, the United States, where Coinbase could be that quote unquote trusted custodian for that potential Bitcoin strategic reserve. I know you called it the crypto, you know, stockpile. It was actually called the digital asset stockpile, which I think is, I think that might even be worse than crypto, because what is it? Yeah. What is all this digital asset hubbub? But anyway, you know, with Trump putting in more people that he trusts kind of in high places, does Brian Armstrong being close to all of this and kind of seemingly having a lot of control over, you know, whether it's the ETFs and then potentially the strategic reserve, is that a huge, I guess, choke point or failure point for Bitcoin going forward?
I don't think there's any big choke point for Bitcoin going forward. I mean, I think it's a speed bump, perhaps, but I don't think there's any choke point for Bitcoin going forward. I think, look, we talked about this before. I'm sure we'll say it 10 times again over the next half hour, but, you know, incentives are everything. And I haven't looked at close enough at Coinbase's financials to understand what the volume is on Coinbase, where they're getting their fees. Given that most of the ETFs are on Coinbase, most of those ETFs are Bitcoin ETFs. My guess is he is heavily weighted to see Bitcoin succeed. But with that said, I'm assuming a decent chunk of his revenue is coming from ETH and all these kind of other, you know, garbage, you know, coins. And so he's probably going to stand up for, you know, some of these other coins. If he is a Bitcoin only platform, I think his platform is probably a lot less interesting to a lot of people than if it were to be, you know, the exchange place for all of these coins. And so I don't think he's going to be the one to say, you know, Bitcoin only. But I do think he will be a Bitcoin fan. So I don't know enough about Brian. I haven't done enough research here. I think he's going to be a pro Bitcoin advocate. He will probably be a pro other thing advocate too. But look, at the end of the day, Bitcoin is unstoppable. All these others are going to go to zero. I have zero doubt in that. And so if I can have somebody who's pro Bitcoin, even though they are pro some of these other things, I think the inevitable will happen and people will learn from that. And we're just going to have another cycle here of some of these, you know, shit coins disappearing. And I think people will ultimately finally understand. It's going to take a long time. Look, I think the thing I love most about Bitcoiners are, you know, they are long-term, you know, plays here. They're not, you know, they're low time preference people. You know, we got a lot of high time preference shit coins out there, but they're low time preference folks. Let's look at the long game here. And I am very, very confident that in the long term, the Bitcoin is going to be the ultimate. It's already the winner, but I think it's going to be the ultimate way that we exchange goods in the future. So I don't have tons of reservations about who he has on that committee that he's starting to build here. I think as long as they're pro Bitcoiners, I think we're going to be good. And I think Brian is, I think RFK is, again, he's on HHS, but he's got a say in some of this stuff. I think David Sacks generally is, I know he's got a lot of people around him that are pro shit coins, but I think he generally is a pro Bitcoin guy. And so if we can get pro Bitcoin guys versus anti Bitcoin, I'm just looking at, now versus a month ago, we have way more pro Bitcoin people and almost zero negative Bitcoin people currently within this administration. And so that gets me excited.
Now, what is your opinion on the Trump coin? I have to ask if you're we're talking about, kind of this, the shit coinery going around, because I mean, it seems like there's going to be a lot less regulation when it comes to the shit coinery as well. I mean, Brian Armstrong even came out and said there's literally a million coins being made every single day. And so for Coinbase to evaluate the volume of which ones to list and which ones to not is statistically impossible. So it seems like it's gonna potentially be the Wild West out there. So I know Bitcoin doesn't care, and it should be Bitcoin only, but does this I guess the crypto casinos almost like worry you that it's going to get away from the real message, at least initially?
Again, I think initially probably, but I think they're a bunch of speed bumps. Like, I'm not worried about it at all. I think the Trump coin is unfortunate. I think that, some of the things that, Donald Jr. and Eric are doing are dumb. But I think Bitcoin is much, much stronger than a few dumb people. So, it does not worry me, in the slightest, because again, over the long term, I think Bitcoin will win. And so I everything else compared to Bitcoin, what Bitcoin is at, I don't know what it is at today, 100,000 or something like that, 20 million coins out there. That's a 2 trillion, market cap, if you will. Everything else pales in comparison. And if you look at the Bitcoin to ETH, graph over the last couple of years, I mean, Bitcoin is still up to the right. ETH has lost market share, if you will. And I think it's just going to continue on that trend. And some of these might go up. I mean, no doubt some of them are going to continue to go up and to the right. But I think they're going to all be losing market share to Bitcoin in such a way that over the next probably 5 to 10 years, Bitcoin is going to be, 99% of the, digital asset, market, whatever market you want to, however you want to kind of frame that. But I don't lose sleep over it. I know a lot of people, spend a lot of words on all these other, shit coins going on. I just think they're going to be speed bumps that aren't going to have any long-term impact on the viability, of Bitcoin. So I'm not super worried about it. I mean, I'm hoping Saylor gets in there. I don't know the latest on this. I know there was some rumors that Saylor was going to be on that, whatever that committee is that they're creating. I hope that's the case. I'm hoping that Bitcoin continues to go up and to the right, because I'm hoping that Saylor's bet here works out, because the leverage that does scare me a little bit, the leverage that Saylor has taken on. But we'll see how that all plays out. Even if Saylor's, little experiment here doesn't work out, it doesn't have a huge, tremendous impact on Bitcoin over the long term. It'll be a short term speed bump that we'll get through, and people will understand, what happened here. And, I hate to say it, but there might be a little bit of the fiat debt, reliance here that might have to be shaken out. I hope it doesn't, but I don't like, the financing of Bitcoin with debt. It's just my personal preference. I know other people on this pod will vehemently disagree with me, and that's great. But I like the purity of Bitcoin only without the debt side of it.
Yeah, and it's interesting because you know, you're bringing up the debt side of things, and you know, a big issue that we have in the United States is, you know, going into debt for medical expenses. And we just had this big, you know, issue, I guess we could call it, of the United Healthcare CEO being, you know, assassinated because you know, I guess the reasoning is kind of up in the air here as the trial has yet to take place. But the conspiracies are out, you know, with United Healthcare denying a third of the claims. It seems like, you know, Luigi Mangione was, you know, some guy that was not necessarily deranged, but was very upset with the way things are going there, right? And, you know, it seems like not only from the health insurance, all insurance kind of has this weird incentive where, you know, like you said before, we're going to keep on saying it, but if you follow the money, it, you know, a lot of things get a little fishy here. So, you know, why have you taken it as like your mission essentially to kind of, I guess, like flip the healthcare industry on its head? And do you think that there's going to be more people that start to see events like this, whether it's, you know, denial of claims or, you know, big giant headlines like we're seeing with Luigi Mangione, that is going to, you know, essentially catapult them to a place where they're, you know, I guess taking more charge of their healthcare, whether that's, you know, going through crowd health or changing their diet or, you know, the million other ways that they could potentially be taking better care of themselves.
Okay, so you've discovered Bitcoin and are on the path to financial self-sovereignty, but simply holding Bitcoin is not enough. You need to make sure that it's stored properly and you are in 100% control over all your assets. So sharing your keys with third parties and taking on that counterparty risk is not the answer. The answer is pure and simple. It's uncompromising self-custody, and there's no better way to do it than the Bitcoin way. They've got over 25 years of cybersecurity experience, and their team of experts can help you properly self-custody your Bitcoin, secure your digital life, configure your privacy phones, and even establish a Plan B residency if you're looking to do so. So I'm going to help you guys out here and give you a free consultation if you take the first step and visit thebitcoinway.com/greencandle, and you can check out the boys at The Bitcoin Way and see how they can help you become self-sovereign.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think what we were talking about before, when people are sort of really starting to question what they've been conditioned over the last 30 or 40 years to just accept as the standard or the status quo, I think is a good thing. You know, and one of those things is health insurance. Everybody says, oh my gosh, you got to have health insurance. What are you doing if you don't have health insurance? And I think that people are, you know, finally realizing that, you know, maybe health insurance isn't actually the way that we should be going. And that has definitely, you know, helped our cause. We actually have a t-shirt that says uninsured on the front, because, you know, we are all with Crowd Health uninsured. And I kind of joke, we are delightfully uninsured because we no longer are slaves to health insurance companies, because as you said, they have perverse incentives. You know, and just real quick, people ask me, you know, this healthcare system, it's so complex and da 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 da. I was like, look, it's not that complex. You've got the buyers of healthcare, which are these health insurance companies. They actually want the price of your services to go up. People don't understand that. You know, so just real quick, there's a rule that says that they can only take 15% of premiums as profit. And so if you have $1,000 premium, all they can make is $150. So how do they make, you know, get their profits to grow by 10% to go to $165? Well, your premium needs to go from $1,000 to $1,100. So they actually make more money when your prices go up, not go down. So you have the buyers of healthcare, health insurance, wanting the price to go up. You have the sellers of healthcare, which are these big hospital systems. Clearly, they want to get paid more for every procedure that they do. They want the prices to go up. So you have the buyer and the seller of healthcare wanting the prices to go up. Guess what? You don't need to be safety-ing with a PhD in economics to understand that if the buyer and the seller want the price to go up, the prices are going up. So there are no market forces here. All the incentives in our system are that the prices will go up. And so what we're trying to do is change the incentives. And so, you know, we at Crowd Health, we help people get their large bills paid for, but we do it on a subscription fee. So if your bills are lower, if the cost of our service is lower, guess what? More people are going to come join Crowd Health. I make more money. The incentives are totally aligned with our end user. So we think that some of these market forces that we're introducing to healthcare, you know, do two things. One, they piss off a lot of people because we're changing the paradigm. You know, to the similar way that Bitcoin is pissing off all of these people in the fiat banking system, you know, all the rent seekers who've been able to profit from all of the transactional costs back and forth. What we're trying to do with healthcare is take out the rent seekers of healthcare, you know, which are these insurance companies, which are these brokers, which are these, you know, pharmacy benefit managers. We're taking all those people, ripping out all that administrative cost in the system and getting significantly lower costs, or excuse me, significantly lower prices as a result of that. So, you know, that's what we're trying to do. It pisses off a lot of people because, you know, as I said before, healthcare is a $5 trillion industry. So that puts a lot of food on a lot of people's tables. So once you start taking food, you know, off of people's tables, people get kind of crazy around that. So they're going to put up a ton of hurdles, just like, you know, Bitcoin has gotten a ton of hurdles with you know, its introduction over the last decade. So yeah, we're going to piss off a lot of people, but we're also going to drive healthcare costs down. So, you know, that's ultimately my goal is we got to drive healthcare prices down. And we need to incentivize people to be healthy. If you can drive healthcare costs down and you can incentivize to be healthy, that has a pretty interesting whiplash effect on the prices of healthcare in general. And that's ultimately what we're trying to do. So, you know, an individual with Crowd Health will pay something like under $2,000 for healthcare for the year. And the commercial health plans for an individual are somewhere between $6,000 and $7,000. So we're already more than 65% lower than the alternative just by driving down prices and incentivizing people to be healthier. I mean, that's gonna have a pretty profound impact on a $5 trillion industry. By the way, if healthcare was a country, it would be, I think, the fourth largest country in the world by GDP. You know, that's after United States, China, and Japan. And I think it's catching up to Japan. So that's how big and crazy our healthcare is. The four largest insurance companies have more revenue than the Department of Defense budget. So that just tells you like how massive these companies are that are basically dictating what we can and cannot do in healthcare. So I could go on for this for 2 hours. I'll stop and shut up for a minute. But in essence, what we're trying to do is change the incentives, and it's working.
No, man, feel free to let it rip, because my next question is like, why do you think it's gotten to this point with the incentives being aligned where it is? Like, how have they been able to, I guess, change the messaging? Is it because, you know, with your health, you just don't want to care about whatever? Is it because, you know, these health insurance health insurance companies provide a lot of jobs? Like, why has this been industry particularly been able to just run wild?
Yeah, whoever controls the money controls the laws, you know, and these big health insurance companies, I just told you how big they are some of the biggest lobbyists in DC. These pharmaceutical companies have tons and tons of money to be spending on lobbyists. And so when you've got all these people in DC who are just trying to get reelected, you know, they need money to do that. The pharma, the health insurance companies, all these people put tons of pressure on them to pass laws that are aligned with their interests. You know, oftentimes hospitals, which are some of the most poorly run organizations on the planet, they're the largest employers in a town. And so anytime you go after a hospital, that impacts, you know, the ability of those people to give to their local US House of Representative. Right. And these guys are trying to get reelected every 2 years. And so if you piss off the largest employer in town, then you are probably not going to get elected the next round. And so they have all the incentive to take care of these hospitals, even though these hospitals' prices are outrageous. I mean, they're just, and it's borderline extortion. Yet they are incentivized to support them. And so we need some counteractive force to reduce these prices. And we can't rely upon DC to help us here. We need to, you know, rely upon the individuals in the community to say, hey, this is enough of this. You know, the fact that I'm paying, you know, $300 for a metabolic panel at a hospital where I can go get a metabolic panel down the street at LabCorp or Quest for like $6 is absurd. And so once we start making people aware, giving more them more price transparency, I think people will stand up and be like, this is enough, you know, enough of this. And so, you know, we've gotten 10,000 people with Crowd Health who've said enough of this. I'm tired of putting my hands in the, in, or my health in the hands of a health insurance company. No more. I'm not doing it anymore. So we just need more of those people to jump on board.
Yeah. And it seems like that movement is kind of, I guess, like moving it that way. But, you know, the big thing I think is, or a big argument, I guess, against that is like a lot of these big companies essentially partner together, right? I mean, like, you know, they'll just like say, hey, you know, if you work at this company, XYZ Bank or whatever it is, big, you know, major seven or magnificent seven companies, they'll provide some sort of health insurance for you. And so you'll just be under the ruse, you know, you'll kind of stay in that matrix where, hey, they've got great benefits. And that's, you know, how many times have, I guess people listening get that when they're like interviewing for a job is like, these benefits are great. And the number one thing they say is health insurance. So I think that a few people are starting to come around. Obviously, you know, you guys got 10,000 at Crowd Health, so that's a good chunk of people. But what is it going to take for more people to get it flipped on their head, do you think? Do you think it's going to take RFK getting up there and saying, you know, hey, what the hell to all these health insurance companies? Or is it just going to be a gradually then suddenly kind of experience that we're having here, like with Bitcoin?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's made gradually than suddenly, honestly. I mean, I think all the statements you made could have been said about, you know, Bitcoin 10 years ago, too, you know, and then gradually, then suddenly here we are. Right. And so it's a long game for us. We have 10,000 people. We need more people just to be educated on the fact that, you know, what they're getting from their employer is not free. You know, all you're paying for it, but it's just the employer not paying you in salary. They're throwing that at, you know, a health insurance, and they're choosing the health insurance for you. So you don't have any say in that. They're choosing their plan. And so I think people will start to understand that, you know, what they're getting is actually not good. I would argue there is no such thing as good health insurance. And in fact, you know, something like 17% of claims at health insurance companies are denied. So you've got a one out of, what is that, six chance of your bill getting declined. And so everybody thinks health insurance is good until it's not. And that's where I think people wake up and it's like, holy crap, you know, Luigi did what he did because of continued denials by United Healthcare. I don't think it's right what he did, but that's the reason why he did it. And I'm not supportive of killing somebody because you're pissed off with them. That's the reason he did it, though, is because they kept denying and denying and denying his bills. I think it was for him, and then for his mom too, who having some healthcare issues as well. I think people are still, you know, waking up to this, that health insurance is not a guarantee that your healthcare bill is going to get paid. Enough people are seeing that I think the tides will turn here. You know, 20% of our membership right now had an option to go with their employer-based insurance, but decided not to. They said no, they declined it. And then they joined Crowd Health. And so I think we're going to see more and more people decline this. You know, the other variable here is your health insurance companies are paying for all kinds of garbage that you don't want your money going towards, right? I mean, we're seeing it with GLP-1s now. I mean, I can fight about people with GLP-1s. I think they're garbage. You know, some of the things that basically every health insurance company in the country, are paying for sex reassignment surgeries. That's your money going to this stuff. And so if you want to continue to have your money going to this stuff, then fine, you go for it. If not, then try something different. And we're at that inflection point now where Crowd Health, even when your company subsidizes your health insurance, is about the same price as a lot of what people are paying on for their health care through their employer. So your employer very rarely pays for 100% of your health insurance. Most of the time it's 50%, 60%, something like that. And so we're getting right at that point now where Crowd Health is about the same price, and you don't have these huge deductibles, and you don't have the claims denials. And so we're slowly getting to that place where there's going to be an inflection point here where I think people are going to be finally be like, yeah, you know what? I'm not doing this. Yes, but I love opportunities from the government to bifurcate, you know, your employment with your healthcare, because I don't think employers have any right to be in your healthcare. I think there's going to be some things coming out that say, hey, employers, you can just give them the salary as opposed to, you know, giving them health insurance and letting them go out and choose for themselves what they want. I think that's ultimately the right path. And we hope, I hope we see some at least movement in that direction over the next 4 years.
Yeah. And I think, you know, that is going to, that's where it's going to go. At least I'm hopeful and optimistic. But why do you think that there was, the movement to centralize everything, and now it seems like we're going in the opposite direction to decentralize. So, you know, did you think it was just kind of, I guess, being a part of that fiat matrix, you know, whatever it is, like people just were like, okay. And then after a while, people just started taking more and more power. And that's how we got to all of this centralization that we're at now. And essentially, it's just now everybody's just flipping on the other side. Is that you know, kind of what happened here with the health insurance industry? Just in
one of the most crooked industries, most fiat industries there is the health insurance industry. Let's be honest, you don't even need health insurance. If you could find somebody that would help you find awesome doctors, negotiate your bills, and fund those bills through a peer-to-peer funding platform, would you take it? That sounds pretty appealing to me, and that's why I've joined forces with CrowdHealth. CrowdHealth is a place that you can do that all in one. One giant place, you can have a group of peers where they will help you find the best healthcare that you need. On top of all that, I can help get you a discount to get you on your feet and get everything started. You can use promo code GREENCANDLE for 3 months at $99. And with all of this, you will get the healthcare you need. You don't have to worry about going through to the doctor, negotiating, everything like that. Did you hit your deductible? Did you not? Is this insurance company going to cover this claim? Is it not? You don't have to worry about any of that stress. And you can just get CrowdHealth behind you where they can help you get the number one place to have a health insurance alternative. So join the revolution. Go to joincrowdhealth.com. Tell them that Green Candle sent you. And join me and the rest of the great CrowdHealth users in this peer-to-peer funding platform. All right, enough for me. Let's get back to the show. General?
Yeah, I mean, I think it all comes down to control. You know, I think the government thinks they can control one company better than they can tens of millions of people making their own decisions. And so I think it's control, but it's, you know, disguised as, oh, we're trying to, protect our citizens from themselves. Right. So I think it's a lot of protection of citizens against themselves that I think is starting to backfire. I think most citizens are being like, I don't need you, government, to protect me. Let me make my own decisions. I'm a smart enough human being to figure this out. And so, you know, if I want to be the one that figures it out, as opposed to, you know, outsourcing my healthcare to my company and to the government, then, you know, we should be able to do that. And so I think a lot more people are taking sovereignty over their own healthcare, their own financials. We're seeing that in Bitcoin. And so I think sovereignty is going to end up winning the day here, and people want to be self-sovereign. I think we're a nation built upon personal responsibility and self-sovereignty. And I think over the last 40 years, you know, since 1970s, the government has taken more control over that. And I think there's finally a backlash here of people going, no, government, let me take care of this. I think we're seeing a movement now. I think there's a direct correlation with COVID. I think enough people have seen through the ruse of, you know, oh, we're here to take care of you. But in reality, it's not about taking care of the citizens. There's other interests that are building up against us. And so I don't think that people that are seeing the government as for us anymore. I think most people are seeing the government as like, get out of my way and let me do what I want to do with my own body, my own money, my own business. And I think that's what's happening. So I think what the left has tried to do with COVID is backfiring right now. And I'm glad that we have people like RFK and others in there who are going to take the opportunity now to give some more responsibility back to the citizens and out of the clutches of government.
Now, do you think the sovereign individual thesis is really going to start to play out here pretty soon?
Yeah. I mean, I think we're already starting to see it. I mean, I think this election was a mandate for sovereignty, for, you know, that theory. And I think we're going to see it more and more over the next few years. Thank God. Cause it, you know, if you would have asked me 2 years ago, I would have said, we are headed in the direction of Europe, which is government controls everything, everything we do. I mean, holy crap. We're seeing it in the UK now. You can't even put up something on social media without being worried about the police showing up at your door the next day. I think we're starting to see some of these things, and Americans are like, this is not what the United States is about. This is not what our founding fathers wanted. And, you know, crap, it took 250 years to kind of come back to that realization. But, you know, I truly believe that that's what we're starting to see here. So I think, you know, the personal sovereignty movement is going to pick up steam here, already has over the last year, but I think we'll definitely pick up steam here over the next few years. And it's exciting to see what the outcome of that's going to be.
Yeah, because I think, you know, I think you're nailing it on the head. I think a lot of people were just basically feeling the same way you were feeling a couple years ago. And then they're just said enough is enough. And I think that that's what this election results are kind of showing here. And I think because everybody's saying like enough is enough, you know, the government hasn't really been helping everything, especially over these past 4 years. My life has gotten worse. The economy, the inflation, all that kind of stuff that they told me wouldn't be an issue is now an issue in my life. And now they're starting to question more. So I'm hopeful and optimistic for the future. And I really am optimistic on, you know, what you guys are doing here at CrowdHealth. So thank you for trying to flip this industry on its head. Now, what is one big mental
hurdle? Just real quick, I think you said something there that was like you hit the nail on the head, which I think ultimately people say, am I better off or am I worse off? You know, and that can hit health. Everybody is pretty much everybody is worse off now than they were, you know, a decade ago. I mean, diabetes, I mean, look back 30 or 40 years, diabetes in our, it was almost non-existent. Type 2 diabetes was almost non-existent 40 or 50 years ago. And now 10% of our population, 30 million Americans, more than 30 million Americans now have diabetes, right? And that leads to catastrophic cardiovascular issues, you know, catastrophic longevity issues. And so people are, and then let's look at the money. Inflation is through the roof. You know, there's this whole crazy thing where inflation is coming down. No. Inflation is not coming down. Like it's actually, our prices are still significantly more now than they were 4 or 5 years ago. Prices are not coming down. And so people are starting to finally say like, my health is not better. My money is not better. My jobs aren't better. We're the first generation, I think, ever that are going to, you know, be worse off than the generation ahead of us. And so people are finally saying like, I am not better off now than I was. And so that's the big transition here. And I think that gets to the core of this, which is if you can't think that you're going in the right direction, there's got to be a change. The status quo for the last 4 decades has been the government will take care of you. That's not working. So we've got to now take it into our own hands, be responsible for ourselves. And I think that's a great trend. And if we can, you know, really build upon that over the next 4 years, I think, you know, the outcomes of that will be pretty incredible.
100%. And I agree with you. Where I was going with that long-winded question, I was going to ask you, what is like one mental barrier that you think like a lot of people that you're discussing with, you know, kind of coming into this new realm, is there some fear, you know, initially going into that more self-sovereign area? What is like kind of like the one mental barrier that you see when people are starting to come over to CrowdHealth and I guess see the light? Or do you get people that are mostly, I guess, just based at this point and just ready to jump in feet first?
Yeah, no, I think that you hit it on the head, which is, I think it's going to take some time for people to finally realize that being self-sovereign will lead to better outcomes. And so, you know, the group of people with CrowdHealth are the ones who have already taken that step. You know, they've taken that step within kind of a couple components of their life. Our biggest group is Bitcoiners. So, you know, Bitcoiners have already taken that step and realized that taking control over my money, it leads to great outcomes. Food. We've got a bunch of people who are carnivore, keto, low carb, whatever you want to tell them, versus, you know, the ADA telling them that grains and carbohydrates and all the pastas and all these kinds of things are good for you. They've already taken that step to say, no, what you're telling me is a lie. and so I'm not going to believe that lie anymore. And so I'm going to go in a different direction. So we've got a huge group of people who are low carb eaters and are much, much healthier as a result of that. The third is just medicine generally. You know, we have been conditioned to think that you go into the doctor, they give you a pharmaceutical, they resolve your symptoms, and now I'm okay. We got a huge group of people who are like, no, I'm not okay. You've resolved my symptoms, but you didn't resolve my core issue. And this is just a product of the fiat medical system where doctors only have 8 to 12 minutes with you. And there's no way they can get into, you know, what you're eating, how you're exercising, you know, all the core components of who you are as an individual, at least in terms of your health. And so, you know, these people have already ditched Western medicine and said, I'm looking for something else because this Western medicine clearly is not helping. Our expected age is declining. Our chronic disease is increasing. All the things are going in the wrong direction on the healthcare side. So that's a third big group of ours. And so those are our early adopters or innovators if you kind of look at the life cycle of a technology. And so I think we're now moving into those early, you know, majority, which are people who are like, huh, maybe it's some of the stuff is, these things have been lies and are starting to question. And so we're seeing more and more of that in our, you know, base of customers at Crowd Health. But I love having our foundation being people who are rethinking the system, questioning all the psyops. And that's a really fun group of people to be a part of. And that's our group at Crowd Health right now is they're the questioners. They're the ones questioning how what they've been told over the last 30 or 40 years. And as a result of that, they tend to be healthier. They tend to look for core issues as opposed to symptomatics. And so our pharmaceutical expenses are like wickedly low. And so it's a great group of people to be a part of when you're funding each other's healthcare expenses. I mean, imagine being a part of that group as opposed to a group of people who think it's okay that you have all these, you know, grains and desserts and all this kind of stuff as a part of your daily diet. That's the group of people that have huge diabetes issues, huge cardiovascular issues, huge cancer issues, huge issues when it comes to, you know, birth and reproductive health. And so we just got a group of people who, you know, take care of themselves, take personal sovereignty over their healthcare. And as a result, the bills are wickedly low.
Yeah, that's all amazing stuff. Well, Andy, you've been very generous with your time. So why don't you tell the people where they can find out more about you and potentially join that Crowd Health team?
Yeah, joincrowdhealth.com is where you'll find us. You can go to all of the social media platforms and it's Join Crowd Health. We talk about all this stuff on social media pretty openly, pretty candidly. It's not your typical corporate social media account, so I think people will enjoy it. Join now in the next couple of weeks. We're going to have our quarterly quarter cow contest on X. So if you see that and you retweet it, then you are in the running for a quarter of a cow. We do that every quarter. It's super fun. So for the meat eaters out there, come in and take a look at that. We'd love to send a cow your way. Join crowdhealth.com. We'd love for you guys to join us.
That sounds amazing. I might have to get in on that as well. I mean, man, that's amazing. So Andy, thank you so much. And I'll put all that in the show notes and everybody smash that retweet button or whatever it is to get that quarter of a cow. I mean, man, I'm getting hungry just thinking about it. But Andy, thanks so much, man. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, brother. Have a good one.
Thank you for tuning into the latest episode of the State of Bitcoin podcast. If you really enjoyed this one, I've got another one cooking up for you. You can click that right here. And you can go to the next episode, which is an absolute banger, where you know I'm bringing you only the latest and greatest guest. Or if you're looking for more macro-related content, you could check out my other channel, Macro Insights Pod. I got it linked for you right here. So where I'm bringing you more about stocks, real estate, traditional finance stuff. So go ahead and check that out. And if you enjoyed this podcast, go ahead and hit that like, hit that subscribe button, and tell a friend to tell a friend. All right, enough from me. I'll see you at the next one.